Deezer Originals.
This is Defending in Numbers.
I'm guessing that everybody listening is about a stone heavier, and they're listening to Defending in Numbers, the football podcast, where we walk down the corridor of uncertainty, pretending to know a little bit more about football than we actually do. My name is Rob Armstrong, and I am a Christmas slash New Year moron. I take my footballing opinions from something your dad probably said when Harry Kane scored against Southampton. He's not as good as some bloke that we've never heard of from the 20s. That's my opinions, but it's not the opinion of Jake the Snake. Hot take, Jake the Snake Entwistle. Jake, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very good. It's definitely not my opinion, I can assure you that. But I am also a stone heavier, I think, that although I've got a bit of a rumbly stomach, I think. Too much food over the holidays.
Well, I know the man who has the remedy for that. He is our indigestion expert.
That's
Ollie Young Miles. Young Ollie Young Miles. Ollie Young Miles, how are you?
I used to do that. Yeah, very well. How are you?
I'm all right. Jake's dying. I've really indigestion. What fix have you got for
me? I'm also struggling. I think I've had one too many pigs in blankets, to be honest, but it's Christmas, isn't it?
Numbers are the cure.
Numbers are the cure.
I've been waiting for.
I feel fine, lads. Haven't had a carb since 1994, me. I just ate kale smoothies all Christmas. Loved every second of it. Of course, this is Defending Numbers, and you can listen on Deezer, where you can also find lots of great podcasts, live Premier League commentary and football playlists. So you can download the app, the Deezer app, right now, or you can go to www.deezer.com. Now, let's get on with the first segment, Jake's Cure, Numbers. It's Week by Numbers.
The Week by Numbers.
Right then, let's settle some of those upset stomachs, some turkeys coming back to life, some pigs in blankets that are waking up and thinking, why am I being burned alive by stomach acids? With the number 56, and that is the number of goals scored by Harry Kane for club and country in 2017, which is more than your Messi's, it's more than your Ronaldo's, it's more than your Lewandowski's, it's more than anyone in Europe's top five leagues, and he's played fewer games than all of them. So, how good is Harry Kane? Is he only as good as your dad thinks, sitting there on Boxing Day after drinking a few ales and saying he's not as good as some bloke?
I think he's the best number nine in the world. I'm going out there and I'm saying it. We're doing it.
That's me spitting imaginary water across the room.
It's happening. I mean, yesterday, so when he was scoring goals for fun against Southampton, on Twitter, it was literally like every second or third tweet on Twitter was a different record he's broken. And it's just mad, you know, he just keeps getting better and better. His all-round game is improving, I think, every year. But he's also scoring more and more goals year on year as well. I mean, he's as you said, he's basically recording Ronaldo and Messi numbers now. So he's got to be considered as an elite striker, in my opinion.
More than Ronaldo and Messi numbers, of course, a significant one is that he's beaten the Alan Shearer number.
Yeah.
Beaten the record from Alan Shearer, which itself was impressive. And I know people are getting a bit antsy about the calendar year as a record and as a way of measuring time, but
Spurs are really good in the calendar year as well.
Yeah, but it is a legitimate amount of time. Like, if someone says, "All right, name sort of five measurements of time," you probably go second, minute, hour,
day, year,
day. Yeah, forget about week.
Yeah,
you put a year in there.
I would say a year
is in my top three measurements of time.
Exactly, that's how people measure age. So I think I understand why that. Yeah, it's not how you don't win anything over a year. You can't plus both together and that makes you 39 goals. But yeah, it's January to December. He scored 39 goals in the Premier League, which, again, as we said, is no one's ever done that before. And he's beaten Alan Shearer's record now. And there's, as Ollie just said as well, there were so many other records that went along with it. The fact that he scored 8 hat-tricks in all competitions. He's now got 8 hat-tricks in the Premier League itself, which is as many as Thierry Henry managed in his career. And another thing I liked about the hat-tricks that he was getting is the fact that in the Premier League in 2017, again, the year rather than the season, there have been 12 hat-tricks scored by Premier League players. He's got 6 of those. So he's got as many hat-tricks as every other player in the Premier League has managed combined. So there's no doubt that he's just this phenomenal goal scorer. And I agree with Ollie saying that his all-round game has improved massively. Against Southampton, he was there was one pass to Son, which I think led to a penalty claim.
Yeah,
to a penalty claim. That was so good, and he's dribbling with the ball now. And the goal numbers, he's broken the monopoly. I think he's the first player since 2010 to be top of this calendar year category that isn't Messi or Ronaldo. And then 2009 was Dzeko or David Villa. I think there's been some mystery around that. But to break that duopoly, even if it's not a real record...
Is it now a triopoly?
Yes. No, probably confident. Not. Probably not. The thing I like about him, though, it's like whenever there's a record to be had, he doesn't think, oh, I'm just going to break that by one. He just smashes it. Like, I remember last year, the Golden Boot race, everyone thought Lukaku had wrapped it up. Two games left, he scored 7 goals. He's like, nah, you're right, you can finish 5 behind me instead.
Flat track bully.
Yeah.
That's the only thing, though. Sky Sports actually did a really interesting sort of breakdown of all these calendar year ones. And they did the number of the percentage of games that the players had scored in during that time. I think Harry Kane was 51%, which is still pretty good if your striker's scoring every other game. But Robin van Persie, when he got 35 for Arsenal, was, I think it was 68% or near 70%. And
that's, he's getting ones and twos rather than
that's the thing is, we've mentioned Harry Kane's hat-tricks, and it's, as I said, he's got as many as every other player. But do Spurs almost wish that he was sharing that load a bit more rather than just in a period of 2 weeks just scoring 12 goals in 2 games and demolishing Southampton? As it turned out, they sort of needed those 3 goals because it was 5-2 with flimsy wrist Hugo Lloris in goal, showing his weaknesses again. But I just think with Harry Kane, I'm not saying stop scoring hat-tricks. I just think maybe it doesn't get skewed, but as Ollie just said, he won the Golden Boot because he scored 7 in the last 2 games. Like, they absolutely hammered Leicester and Hull. It wasn't necessary. Do you want him to spread those 7 out and make sure that each get more wins rather than just 2 massive wins?
So basically you're siding with everyone's dad.
No,
you
never.
Are.
I believe in the calendar year.
Bullish.
No, I'm saying he's very good. I just think Spurs would wish maybe still score the hat-tricks, but make sure you're spreading it a bit like that Van Persie year.
I think the impressive thing, like when you break it down by years, like we've been doing, is if you compare him to the Messi and Ronaldo figures over the past 7 years when they've been sharing it between themselves, he's actually 3rd for goals per game ratio, which is quite impressive, really. Ronaldo in 2013 got 1.16 goals per game. I think he got 69 in 59.
Ooh.
And then top
nice.
Is Lads. Messi in 2012 when he got 91 in 69, which is 1.31.
That's when Barcelona were in god mode, though, wasn't it? I think there is probably something to be said with that Spurs haven't even won a trophy in any of this.
Those are like Pelé made-up numbers, those Messi ones. They're absolutely absurd. But then Kane this year, 56 and 52, is 1.07. So, I mean, he's... He hasn't scored as many goals as Ronaldo and Messi have in those years, but he's got a better rate than a lot of the years that they've managed. So I think if you look at it that way, I mean...
It's even better.
Yeah.
But ask your dad and he'll say, he's no Dixie Dean.
Dixie Dean,
he's bad at
Dixie
course. Dean.
Well, actually, Dixie Dean, speaking of Dixie Dean, we'll go up to the City of Liverpool, albeit the other club up there, and we'll go for the number 43, which is the number of points Liverpool have lost from winning positions since Jurgen Klopp took charge. Who's to blame? I mean, they looked great on Boxing Day.
Yeah.
But
Swansea are woeful.
Swansea are pretty much down.
Yeah.
They're planning the... Actually, Cardiff look like they might be on the way up actually as well.
Swapsies.
Don't they? So they're not going to have that derby. There's no positives to look at for Swansea.
No,
sorry,
runners.
Swansea fans. I have no positives for you. But what we do have is the 43 points that Liverpool have thrown away. We talk about Liverpool a lot here and how good they are attacking. And that's what we saw, obviously, on Boxing Day. But the defensive problem... It's still a lingering.
Yeah, it was the game before Boxing Day. The merriment of festive fixtures mean we haven't been able to talk about it. We can only have one podcast a week, so
it's merriment.
We missed that Arsenal Liverpool game, which was hard to watch.
320 perfect seconds.
Yeah, exactly. It was incredible, and that was where this sort of stat has come from. And again, everyone was expecting them to beat Swansea. They actually threw away it, or they lost to Swansea at home last season. So again, it throws into that they shouldn't be ever losing those games, and it's come down to whose fault is it, and it is that defence collectively. But the Simon Mignolet sort of anti agenda. I think that's
Xhaka goal. He's got Xhaka in his fantasy team. He must do to let that
even the Ertzel one. I know that was a really good finish where he kind of taps it into the ground or whatever he does, but. You see the
he
replay.
Was already diving.
There's so many slow motion replays of the Ertzel finish, but you've just got Mignolet flying down like Matrix slow motion in just the most mind blowing position. Yeah. What's he up to?
He just hasn't learned. He's always the same, isn't he? I mean, but it's the same thing with Liverpool, I think. There's that stat doing the rounds that they've got the best defensive record at home in the Premier League. I think they've conceded three goals.
Three goals, yeah.
But I think away from home in the big games, like that Arsenal one, the Sevilla one, Tottenham even in October, they're still very susceptible against big teams away from home. And that's the issue that Klopp has to still address, I think. I think tightening up against small teams at Anfield, they've definitely done that recently. You know, they've only conceded seven goals in the last 10 Premier League games. And three of those were against Arsenal. So they have tightened up in most games, but I still think when it matters in the big ones, you can definitely get at them, and they're still a bit short at the back.
It's just that, it's like, because Milner brilliantly said after that Arsenal game that Liverpool need to become more boring.
Yeah. Like, it's like his PR agent being on the phone. They're like, Milner, we need you to be relevant again, become a meme.
Self-fulfilling prophecy, wasn't it, sort of? But he is right in a sense, because they'll go out gung-ho, they always win, they can win a game in the first 15 minutes. Against Swansea, like they were missing chances, and again, they're scoring lots of goals, but they are missing quite a lot. It happened in Arsenal. Mane tried that overhead kick where he could have brought it down, chested it, kicked it up twice, and kicked it in. Salah, for all the goals he's scored, he should have scored in that game as well. He was 1-1. I think that's how it fell to Mane in the end. But they're missing these chances, and then they're just not defending. They've made so many since Klopp took charge. They've 40 defensive errors, and 20 have led to a goal. So 50% every time they make every other mistake they make, they're conceding. And whether that's down to Mignolet, whether that's down to the centre-back partnership, that is a big problem. When they're playing these small teams now, they're dominating games, they're scoring goals for fun. And that's when Liverpool look good. But they need to, as Ollie said, these big games, even if they can win the game in 15 minutes, you don't feel comfortable when they're 2-0 up.
No,
Liverpool fans watching that game with the Liverpool fan, be it like, they're silent because they know that they can't get excited yet because it's 2-0. But as
it's that wonderful cliche, isn't it? It's the hardest lead to have or something. Yeah. What is it?
2-0.
It's the easiest scoreline to give away or something. Yeah. It's probably some correct way of saying it. But, I don't know it. I'm the idiot. You're the geniuses.
I don't know that one. But
it's like on FIFA, you're most susceptible to conceding after you've scored, isn't it?
Yeah. That's what Martin Tyler always brings out.
Yeah.
That's probably where I've got it from.
That's probably where...
Not real football.
I think one thing for Liverpool that is encouraging, though, is the performances of Gomez and Alexander-Arnold the past couple of months. Those two look really, really good. I'd like to see Gomez play in the middle because that's where he started out at Charlton and got the move to Liverpool in the first place. And they've sort of moulded him into a sort of versatile fullback type who can operate on both sides.
Alexander-Arnold got an England call-up, didn't he?
Yeah, Gomez he got man of the match as well, didn't he, against Germany. So those two are really good. I think if they just have like a big leader alongside them, they'll be able to flourish a bit more as well.
Yeah.
So
I definitely think he should start playing them both.
Yeah.
Because at the moment he is using Gomez as the right back in the lead. Alexander-Arnold played against Swansea because of the fixtures piling up. But Gomez has been the right back in the league and Alexander-Arnold in the Champions League, which seems strange because Trent's the more attacking player. His technique, by the way, is unreal. I don't think he'll be a right back for much longer, to be honest. Mm.
He used to be a winger, didn't he?
Yeah. He takes the free kicks for Liverpool under 18 and under 23s.
He scored one in the Championship, didn't he?
Yeah, in the qualifying. But he played an incredible pass. We said Harry Kane's pass to Son was good. Alexander Arnold, if you go and watch that back, it was the commentary said Steven Gerrard-esque and you think, oh God. But watch it and it was absolute brilliant. So I'd love to see him getting more games. I'd love to see Joe Gomez start because probably he looks like he's their best defender at times. Yeah. So why not stick him in the middle?
And then you've need a Van Dijk.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
Dun, dun, dun.
Apparently everyone needs a Van Dijk except Southampton who kind of don't seem to play him.
Yeah.
I think they're resigned to... I think in January is when he'll go.
It looks like he's off.
For a bargain, 70 million or something.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the number 51. And Man United. Oh, it's like the Moisey days are back. 51 crosses Man United attempted against Burnley. The joint most in a single Premier League match under Jose Mourinho. And harks back to that. Was it the Fulham game where they put in 83 or something?
Yeah,
83, yeah.
And every West Ham game where now we just get Masaku to run down the wing and try and pass it in. Mm. Oh, just a quick shout out to Bobby Madeley. I hope you have a horrible New Year and you have a terrible Christmas.
You did get robbed. But yeah, no, it was a bit like that. Against Burnley, it was, you know, the lack of I think, well, City never go two goals down, but if they did, I think they'd stick to their principles and try and play the same way and attempt to get back. United just panicked, put it out wide, whipped it into the box, hoping for something. And I mean, you've got to give them credit because they did come back eventually. Lingard, Messi Lingard came and saved them again. But there was just no sort of clear pattern of play to what they were doing. It was very sort of hopeful and a bit desperate at times. And I think that's the big difference between United and City. There's no sort of... When you look at City, you know how they play. You know, they've got so much rotational movement up top. De Bruyne and Silva just pull the strings in midfield. United are very much reliant on Pogba to do something or a moment of magic from one of the top players. They don't really have that sort of style in the attacking third, I don't think, yet. And that was evident yesterday. It's Burnley who defended very well, aside from that last minute where Lingard equalised.
Are Man United dropping off now? I mean, they've had a couple of dodgy results recently. They had the Leicester game and then Burnley on Boxing Day.
Out of the League Cup.
Out of the League Cup.
Yeah.
And Man City, I think, basically, let's not worry about them.
No.
So now it's a second place title race, more or less, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it looked like Man United are almost a shoo-in for that at the beginning of the season, but they look all over the place at the moment.
Well,
really.
That's the thing is... everyone was aware of it when they did start the season that they had some quite nice fixtures and they were scoring a lot of their goals late when other teams were chasing the games. And they did look good and they had that game plan of opening the score early and then just biding their time, rope-a-doping to win 4-0 in the end. But now Mourinho getting a bit fussy about fixture lists during the festive period, saying that they've been given the hardest time with them all. But he's already used his good fixtures up and it's not like everyone's going to have that period in the season where you get a tough run of games. Man United did very well to put all those teams away early on, which was meant to give them a platform for when it became tough like this. And they're still second. They are dropping points. And as Ollie said, that identity and style of play or ideas on the pitch, at the moment it's give it to Ashley Young, who's reinvented himself as left wing back, and get him to cross it in. He made 16 himself in that 51. I know he might take corners as well, but... It just seems too one-dimensional, and it's playing Lukaku and Ibrahimovic for the first time.
That Ibrahimovic didn't work at all.
He went off at half-time.
I think the Ibrahimovic thing is actually quite a big issue because, I mean, it didn't help him yesterday. He was playing as a number 10, but it just clearly didn't work for him. But him and Lukaku, I just don't think, is a natural fit. You know, they're both...
Lukaku seems a bit mentally frail as well this season, doesn't he?
Well,
really,
I think...
He seems to be letting a two- or three-game drought really seems to affect him. Every time he scores afterwards, he does this sort of no celebration thing, as though he doesn't care, but we all know deep down. He's a big gooey inside. He really does care.
I think part of the problem for him, though, is when they bought him, they spent $75 million on him. They did that big reveal, you know, with the Adidas thing in LA or whatever it was, which was absurd.
Which Pogba then got fined £300 for playing too much music at.
So they were like, oh, look, this is our big, shiny new striker. He's our main man. And then a couple of months later, they were like, you know what? We're not 100% sure about you, so we're going to get Zlatan back. Mm. And I think just him coming back, Lukaku's sort of, you know, he looks, doesn't look as natural as he did at the start of the season. The goals were flying in for him when he first started. Now he's got that competition. You know, it seems that his confidence has definitely been hit a little bit, I think, and he's struggling to cope with the pressure of, you know, competing with Zlatan and Rashford and Martial up front.
Well, I think even Rashford and Martial now, they all started so well. Like, in those games, those were confidence-building games and you had the opportunity to stat pad, etc., or whatever phrase you want to use. But Martial, again, looks... I feel so sorry for him. The way Mourinho said, like, all the childish finishing in that... They were massive chances against Leicester and you have to criticise him from it. But the choice of words used and the way he's always sort of addressed these players, just the confidence just must drain out of them. You can be scoring a hat-trick one week and then the next week you feel like you're not doing your job again. And I just feel like it's complete opposite to what Pep Guardiola is doing at City with saying that Raheem Sterling, it gets a bit tedious. I think they're opposite ends of the spectrum. Guardiola says, oh yeah, he's the best player in the world in that position. Oh, I wouldn't get in the Man City team. Fernandinho is way better than me.
Are there no players that respond well to a bollocking anymore? Is that because it seems to me that's...
It's a very old school thing, isn't it?
We talk about Guardiola saying... Yeah. Personally, right, let's take this into the real world. And you meet someone who gives too many compliments.
Oh, no. Yeah.
I find them disingenuous and insincere and I don't trust them. Do players not feel that with Guardiola?
That's like, what he's saying in public. We don't know what he's saying in private. Yeah. He could be like, Raheem Sterling is the best winger in the world and then gets him in at training. He's like, you're not.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know what actually goes on behind closed doors, but I just think, yeah, like bollocking people in public, no manager really does that anymore. It's a really old school sort of tactic that has kind of left the modern game. But Mourinho, as we all know, is stubborn as an ox and he won't change ever. And that's just what he does. That's his, you know, his whole mantra has been like that and he's been successful with it. So he'll just keep doing it and doing it. But the problem is with this United side, there's so many young players that, you know, in his previous jobs, he always had a core of experienced players who, a lot of them had worked with him before, Carvalho and people like that. At United, it's a very young squad. And if he doesn't get them on board, then, you know, he hasn't really got much left. So he needs to play it carefully, I think, in terms of when to dish out the criticism and when to, you know, maybe rein it in a little bit.
I just think as well, just quickly on that, is I remember watching an interview, sort of more a more in-depth interview with Jose Mourinho about him as a manager. And he said, sometimes my weakness is that if people don't respond to me in a way that I know other players should, I don't get why. Rather than, he said, my weakness is adapting to each player's personality. There are definitely certain players and certain mindsets that Jose Mourinho likes and he can get the best out of. He can maximise players' ability if they fit this mould. He's finding it difficult now that maybe for the one time in his career he's got a majority of the people that he doesn't click well with. He's made Marcus Rashford look very good. Jesse Lingard has seemed to... One of his finishes was that where he took it around the keeper and hit the post. That was probably one of those childish finishes he was talking about. Lingard then comes off the bench and scores two. First time he's ever scored two in a Premier League game. So he's probably found now that, right, Lingard, yeah, he probably reacts well to it. But for the first time ever, it might be, oh, wait, I've got to change a lot rather than a little. And at a time where it becomes, fixtures come fast and you're dropping a few points and it becomes more challenging, that's when he has to adapt. And at the moment, just crossing the ball in wide and then saying everyone's bad or not performing or not creating chances, he's got to take a bit of responsibility, I think.
It's Moisinho.
Exactly what he is.
Moisinho. Let's move to Spain. Let's take it to sunny Spain. And the number is 210. And Arsenal fan Jake here has gone into some kind of fit remembering his experience of Bayern Munich earlier this year. But that's
every year.
But that's the aggregate scoreline of the last three Clásicos between Barcelona and Real Madrid at the Bernabeu. So that's three games in a row Barcelona have won away at Real Madrid, which is pretty... It's a huge knock for Real Madrid that they don't seem to be able to put away their biggest rival at home, because every year it's a two-horse race and you need to win that one. Yeah. And they don't seem to have that home advantage anymore. And this last one that's just gone, what was it? It was the 23rd, wasn't it? So it's the Saturday.
Yeah. The 3-0.
Messi's doing it with one boot on. he set out the final goal, didn't he, with one boot on. And Real Madrid down to 10 men and looked hopeless even before then. What's going on there?
Had an air kick, didn't he, before Barcelona scored the first.
Real Madrid, is it just one of those things where they've all just lost form at the same time? Or Barcelona, have they just stumbled? Because Valverde's basically had what we thought at the beginning of the season was the worst Barcelona team in donkey's years, right? Yeah. This was meant to be the end of their cycle. But in the league this year, and to be fair, the Champions League as well, they look brilliant.
I think the Real Madrid thing, there's a couple of factors down to it. I think Zidane's big strength in taking over that job is they gave all their big players confidence and he gave them the freedom to sort of express themselves. And, you know, it worked perfectly the first 2.5 years. But I think a similar thing at Bayern when Ancelotti went, the lack of like a clear structure and, you know, tactical sort of philosophy in place is... maybe left a mark on the players who've got a bit sort of lax, a bit casual. And, you know, they've been playing 4-4-2 quite a lot of Ronaldo and Benzema up top. It hasn't really worked as well as he might have liked. But also their squad is a lot weaker than it was last year. They got rid of Morata, who has been excellent at Chelsea, but it didn't replace him at all.
He was their second top scorer last year, wasn't he?
Yeah, he got loads of important goals to them. His goals per game ratio, goals per minutes, whatever, was outstanding. I think he got 15 and 26 in La Liga.
Yeah, and he only Ronaldo, sort of, in terms of how valuable his goals were, last season, only Cristiano Ronaldo's goals won Real Madrid more points. If you took Morata's goals away, they would be only worse off if you took Ronaldo's.
And that was all, they basically got rid of him thinking that, his name's Mbappe. Asensio. You think he got rid of him for Mbappe?
Well, that was the rumour, wasn't it?
That's the thing. They haven't made a huge signing since Rodriguez
because
three years ago.
Like they were going to just sort of... Marco Asensio was going to be... I know it's a different player entirely, but he was going to be the one to sort of step into the attacking mould and they were going to adjust the shape because he's coming in and scoring.
Quiet. Yeah. They were playing him sort of off the left as a left midfielder in this 4-4-2 at times. And he's done well. I mean, he's a young player, so he plays well one week and plays badly next week. That's the nature of it. But they've sort of invested in youth, bringing in like Theo Hernandez and Llorente and people like that. But the squad just isn't as strong as it was last year. And when they've got players who aren't performing to their best, like Ronaldo and Cruz at times, you know, they haven't got the players to come in and sort of do a job instead. So, yeah, there's definitely problems at Real Madrid. And it'll be interesting to see how Zidane sort of remedies it, because his first 2 years at Real Madrid have just been all winning everything in sight. Mm. This year, they finished second in the Champions League group to Spurs, if we all forgot, and then got battered by Barcelona. So suddenly, you know, the question marks about him have started to, come out of the woodwork a bit.
That Barcelona team, Zidane has lost 11 games as Real Madrid manager and won 8 trophies. So it's like, so hard to, when people are talking about sacking him, you think surely not. But first manager to lose back-to-back home Clásicos in the league.
Really?
That's the first time they've ever lost 3 in a row. I know he wasn't in charge for all of them, but he was in charge for 2 of them. So that is the sort of thing that puts you under massive pressure at Real Madrid, especially when Barcelona have got Thomas Vermaelen out of the woodwork. When Umtiti got injured, there's that crazy stat since he's joined Barcelona, their win percentage almost doubles when he's in the team. So when he got injured, they thought, this is where Barcelona will struggle. Vermaelen's come in and in 7 games have conceded about 2 goals. So Valverde, they're also playing 4-4-2, which again is something different. They're waiting for Dembele to come back. Paulinho's proved everyone wrong, one of the top scoring midfielders in Europe.
No. Always saw it.
Yeah. But it's that sort of thing. So I think that piles more pressure under Zidane, because despite losing Morata and James, they bought these young players, as Ollie said. Jesus Vallejo coming back from loan was... Everyone thought he was going to slot in. Marcus Llorente, I don't think, has played. They bought Dani Ceballos, who was the golden ball winner at the under-21 European Championships, which had Marco Asensio in it. So everyone thought, right, despite moving on these big players, Real Madrid's squad is going to be built, and now they can bring in young players to do that. Barcelona have bought in Nelson Semedo right back. Dembele, who hasn't played, was one of their most... That was their marquee signing. And no defenders, but yet Vermaelen's come back, is fit, and they're not conceding goals. It's really bizarre, because the first half in that Clásico as well, I thought Kovacic, who was man marking Messi, did a really good job, and then second half it just opened up and 3-0 and the game was over. So
I think Ter Stegen's made that next step this year as well. He's gone from being an excellent keeper to one of the top 5, I think, now this season. He's saved them so many points and goals. They've only conceded 7 goals, which if you think of Barcelona, even at their peak, everyone always said, oh, defensively you can get at them. If you get the ball off them, that's the first thing. But attacking them, you know, they can be vulnerable. But I think this year, their last line of defence has been more solid than it has been for a long time.
He's played a similar role to De Gea at Man United. De Gea's actually made the second most saves in the Premier League, which I think is another problem about the Man United stuff. But Ter Stegen as well has made a lot of saves and a lot of really good saves, so that it doesn't skew it, because they've got a good goalie, but that's not their fault. But they're winning games thanks to everyone on the pitch. It's not Messi scored all the goals, but Paulinho's getting those important ones, their goalie is playing well, their defence is playing well. So Barcelona looks set to win La Liga
at a canter.
I think it'll be, if Real Madrid have got a game in hand, but it could be 14 points.
Yeah.
And I know Real Madrid aren't second, but
Serie A is pretty much the only league still with anything to play for at the top. Yeah. I mean, every other league pretty much looks settled by Christmas. Yeah.
Alright, this next number, if anyone follows Jake on Twitter, they'll know he's about to jizz his pants in the studio, because I'm going to go for number 32, and that's the club goal scored by Kylian Mbappe in 2017, the most by a player under the age of 21 since the original, the vintage, the fine vintage Ronaldo. He scored 38 for PSV in 1995. So that is a fairly decent list. I think Michael Owen scored more than Mbappe as well. No, just Ronaldo. Just Ronaldo. Yeah. So it's Ronaldo, original. Mbappe, Michael Owen.
Yeah. And then Raul Aguero come into it as well.
Not a bad list.
It's ridiculous. Michael Owen and so the top three, which quite
Michael
nicely,
Owen didn't play against Farmers, though.
The top three are the only ones that are sort of. And we've said under the age of 21, but in terms of just Mbappe literally turned 19 at the end of the year. Mm. So in terms of looking at teenagers, only the three of those were actually teenagers. The other ones had turned 20 in the year. So whether he's playing against Farmers or not, ten of those goals were in the Champions League. Yeah. Six were in the knockout stages. Only Ronaldo scored more than him in the Champions League
Man
this
City,
year.
Farmers. I Man think those goals he scored against Man City don't count.
At the time, they were
Juventus with Bonucci, Buffon, Chiellini.
Yeah.
I think for him, what makes it more impressive, so, I mean, he's got 32 goals and 16 assists in 52 games in this calendar year, back to the calendar year stats again. But I think the impressive thing for him is to do it across two clubs at his age. He's gone from Monaco, where he was basically becoming the centrepiece of their side, traded that in to go to PSG to basically, play alongside Neymar and Cavani, and he's just adapted seamlessly. He's gone from playing as a central striker in a 4-4-2 to a right wing in a 4-3-3, and it doesn't matter. He's just carried on developing and scoring goals and assisting goals. So
when's it right to ask if he can do it on a cold Tuesday night?
When they get in the Champions League, because he's only doing it on the elite platforms. It is, again, for all you can say of Ligue 1, obviously isn't the best league. The fact that there's no other Ligue 1 players on that list. He's obviously good. Like, we've got Michael Owen in the Premier League. That 29 goals as a teenager is very impressive. I'm not taking that away. Then Raul's next. Then Sergio Aguero is there when he was at Atletico Madrid. If Ligue 1 was poor or producing poor players, they'd all be on there. Kingsley Coman would have been on there. Nicolas Anelka, when he was 12 playing for PSG, would have been on there. Thierry Henry never did it for Monaco. Martial didn't do it for Monaco.
Yeah.
Mbappe has had the fortune of playing in those... Monaco were very good last season. They had a very good bunch of players playing well at the same time. Bernardo Silva, Thomas Lemar, Mbappe, Falcao up front. That was a deadly attack. Now he's moved into another one. So yes, he's been fortunate in the teams he's played. But to score 32 goals when he scored one when he'd turned 19 on his birthday.
What an idiot.
So I think the mad thing about him is, as well, he's apparently the seventh best player in the world at 19. Yeah. Which is absurd. This is his first season in football, and you look at what he's achieved. He won the league. He's broken about a million records. Seventh on the Ballon d'Or list. He is phenomenal, and he's very much like Ronaldo. He's so explosive and strong and skillful that I think, you could put him in any team and he'd start. I think he's that good.
And that's why I mentioned earlier about them selling Morata. That was Florentino Perez did an interview on the radio saying, Mbappe and Dembele are the ones everyone's interested in. I'd rather have Mbappe.
Why did they miss out on him then? Because he wanted to go to Real Madrid, right? Because he's got the posters in his room and everything.
It must have been PSG must have that deal. They haven't even paid the money. That's what's weird. Mm. Real Madrid surely
they've avoided relegation, though, so they will pay it. That was the clause, wasn't it? It was like, we'll give you 180 million if we stay up.
Yeah.
And Monaco, that's a done deal then.
But Monaco could have said, we'll take the money now from Real Madrid. Like, you would have thought Real Madrid would have put a better, more upfront package to it. But yeah, it's just...
I think January Real Madrid will be going big. They've been linked with Icardi and people like that, haven't they? Because, as we were saying, they haven't really spent anything for the past 3 years. Which, if you consider the way football's gone in those 3 years, with transfer fees sort of rising a ridiculous rate, the fact that they've been very quiet in that time has been quite interesting. So I think they'll make a splash in January at the earliest.
Harry Kane,
if not the summer.
Anyone?
No.
That would be Benzema for as
you
much.
You can
as,
see them looking at him, though. Yeah. I mean, he's similar to Benzema in the fact that he can link the play and stuff.
Yeah,
and,
he's very similar to Ronaldo in the fact that he takes a lot of shots. So those two, Real Madrid's shot numbers, that would be almost like a personal duel. I think they could play together, but it'd be really interesting because Ronaldo would be like, hold on, this guy's shooting as much as me? Wow. But
especially if you bring Bale back into the mix. He loves a shot as well, doesn't he?
God, that front three would be... That'd be like 20 shots per game each, I think.
Zero passes.
Yeah. I think Mbappe, like, seventh in the year for Mbappe, just quickly, like, up there with the likes of Ronaldo and stuff. In terms of the year, and it's not based on just pure ability overall, it's obviously voting every year. his year, he deserved to be that high, I think. He did everything. Those assists Ollie mentioned, goals. He's so quick. There was the one stat about his actual pace that we've got as well is he scored a last-minute winner against Lille and he peaked at 36 kilometres an hour, which was everyone was making the average speed with Usain Bolt. But the fastest in the Premier League this season is Leroy Sané at 35.8. So everyone loves Leroy Sané and how quick he is.
Oh, I don't know if they've clocked in on Marko Arnautovic's first goal yesterday.
With celebration against Stoke.
Yeah, so, speed. He probably did beat it in the end then. But I just think for someone to be so almost so complete in an attacking set, he's not very good at defending, but as a winger...
Drop him then.
He's gone from playing on the left shoulder in a two up front, as Ollie said, to a right wing. I didn't think he'd even do it that seamlessly. He scored and assisted in the most games. He's breaking so many records. Highest scoring Champions League teenager ever.
It was
a brilliant year, and to be that close to Ronaldo or the closest to Ronaldo, I think, is a massive credit whichever league you're playing in, and he'll definitely do it again next year.
All right, while Jake cleans himself off, let's move on to the next section. I'm embarrassed to ask.
I'm embarrassed to ask.
Okay, so as we mentioned earlier, Man City, forget the Premier League. It's done. City have ridden away. They're the best team by a mile. They're probably not going to lose. I don't even know if they're going to draw.
Yeah, they've still got that one draw. Like, that's how crazy it is.
Against NAF old Everton. Yeah. That was the one where was there a flare or something? I just remember in the second half, you couldn't see most of the pitch for some reason.
Yeah, it was Carl Walker up in the stands.
Off, yeah.
Fuming.
Oh, that was, it was steam coming out of his ears. anyway, the Man City, they've got their incredibly rich owners, which obviously everyone will accredit the title to. Oh my God, they spent all this money. Benjamin Mendy, that 50 million quid. That's been spent well.
Free games. Yeah.
Social media manager he is.
Exactly. £50 million social media intern. but with all that money, they've got little stations around the world, haven't they? Because they've got New York City FC, right?
Yep.
I'm looking around for looks of confirmation here. Yeah, they have...
Melbourne City.
And then don't they have a Yokohama FC?
So Melbourne and New York are their proper sister clubs. Yeah. So they wear sky blue... And they are pretty much Australia's Man City or the estate's Man City.
And then there's also the one in Spain where they're all there. That has about 6,000 population or
who
something.
Who beat Real Madrid a couple of months ago.
And had the kid Mafio, who man-marked Messi, and everyone was laughing about it because he literally didn't leave his side the whole game. And now is there another Belgian one as well? So what's happening? Is Man City just going to have a team in every league?
Well, it looks that way. I mean, big clubs have had feeder clubs for a while, and United and Arsenal had links to Belgian clubs in the 90s, so it's not an entirely new thing, but the way that City are doing it is in that they are they're essentially making a global franchise across the world. So they've got six clubs. They either own outright or part own six clubs in four continents now. Belgium will be the seventh. I think it's Oostende in Belgium. Top
is it going to be Oostende City?
Yeah, well, maybe, probably will change to be,
And yeah, I mean, basically, it's quite interesting what they're doing. They're essentially trying to impart this philosophy or style that they've cultivated under Guardiola across the world at their other clubs, in the hope that that they'll get these players coming through the ranks who can either go and be sold for profit or eventually end up at City. So if someone's playing well at New York City, he might get a loan to Girona and then get a loan to Man City and then join them permanently along the line. So it's quite interesting what they're doing. And it'll be, I mean, I'm sure that other clubs will start picking up on it and trying to reenact it, because it is very sort of commercially driven, obviously. And it's sort of the way modern football is going. But other clubs are definitely going to latch onto it, I think, because it is working. I mean, the Girona example, I mean... City's whole thing is that the reserve league in the Premier League isn't competitive and players' development stall. So why not just send them to a La Liga club where they'll play against Messi and Ronaldo, like you were saying? So it makes sense from that point of view to have sort of feeder clubs that they can sort of cherry pick players off or send other players to.
And what strikes me about, because it's called, when you see CFG or City Football Group, that's what you're talking about. It's not under the umbrella of Manchester City. Manchester City are part and are sort of the poster boy of City Football Group now, and it's become that it's become an organisation. I think Giles Tremlett in The Guardian wrote a brilliant piece on it, talking about the ins and outs and the nuances of it all. And he was saying that it's sort of becoming the Coca-Cola of the football world, or a Google or a Facebook. And the man behind it all sort of tried to install this at Barcelona himself. But again, because that was owned by the fans in Catalonia, they were very sort of sceptical about a global Barcelona, because the fact that they are Catalonian is part of the pull of it and why they love the club. So at Man City, he's definitely had the chance to do that because of the owners and their outlook, because of their ambition for the football club as a product, as an entertainment product, rather than just a football club, which shouldn't be shunned at as well, because it's obviously brought them success. But there's so much research behind it as well. I think one of the clubs as well that we haven't mentioned yet is I think fairly recently acquired, was one in Uruguay called Atletico Torque, and they're not.
All their shirts.
Like I was going to say, they're not even one of the well known ones in Uruguay. But Man City, because of the per capita production of a certain level of footballer from Uruguay, it's tiny, but you get the likes of Suarez and Cavani being produced from there. They've identified that as a breeding place of good footballers. So they install themselves there in the City Football Group. They instill an academy that will teach those players and train those players in the same way that you do get at Manchester City, with the hope that when the next Luis Suarez appears, Manchester City now have that direct link to either get them themselves, or, as Ollie said, move it into La Liga, put it over in MLS, which is, they've already got a player there at the moment who's very highly rated, called Yangel Herrera. He's a Venezuelan, very good centre midfielder, was really good in the under-20 World Cup. And he's just, no one even knows he plays for Man City yet. He played for New York City with Patrick Vieira, and you forget, but he is actually Man City's player. There's so many players like that now that, because of these links and the ease of fluidity in that network itself, they're City Football Group players now. Yeah. And that is, as Ollie said, that could become a trend, but they're definitely trailblazing in terms of installing it to a level of success.
When we get in Reykjavik City, they've got a good per capita, haven't they? It's like 300,000 of them, and they're in the World Cup.
Yeah, exactly.
Get some young Icelandic ledge. send them through the European teams. Stick them out in Uruguay for a bit.
It's a really clever idea, because City don't have that global reach that Man United do or Real Madrid do, because they've only really been relevant for the past 10 years. I mean, no offence to City fans, but
I don't think they'll
take it. Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, you know, this is a way of getting fans in North America and Australia by buying clubs that have some sort of affiliate link to Manchester City. So that's another part of it. So obviously it's great for City. I think they've got over 240 players, I think it said in that article, contracted at these various clubs. And obviously the best ones, they can, you know, they will end up at Man City, or they'll be sold. Like Aaron Moy was Melbourne and has ended up at Huddersfield. He's doing very well.
I was going to say, they bought Melbourne at that time for 6 million or whatever, a reported fee that was less for what they actually sold him to Huddersfield for.
Yeah.
So again, in terms of if you just look at it from a pure business perspective,
a player is never bigger than the club.
Yeah.
But I think, I mean, yeah, obviously it's great for City, but I think the one thing that, you know, we can maybe be slightly wary of is the fact that if other clubs do take this example, suddenly we're in a situation where every club has six other clubs linked to it. And then, you know, the sort of the integrity of the sport, I think, starts to be questioned a little bit. There was that thing in the Champions League where RB Leipzig and RB Salzburg both qualified for the Champions League qualifying stages at the start of the season. And UEFA had to be like, oh, actually, we'll loosen our really strict rules that two clubs in the same competition can't have the same ownership. So obviously they don't take it too seriously. But we could get a situation where, you know, like City, there's United have six clubs, Chelsea have six clubs.
Mm. Premier League just becomes a big six because everyone's
suddenly,
an affiliate. Yeah,
suddenly, exactly. Premier League's gone properly global, I think, in that stage.
All right, then let's move on. And like a Man City fan trying to work out who their new Uruguayan starlet is, it's who's this fella?
Who's this fella?
Okay, I think I might have heard of this bloke a little bit.
Oh my God.
I've heard of him a little bit. Leon Bailey, who I believe is now at Leverkusen.
Yes.
And came from a Belgium team.
Genk.
and was linked with an English. I think Chelsea maybe had a look at him.
Chelsea are the ones now that I think look at him. Man United, yeah, Man City, all
of
them.
Yeah. Because I saw him linked with loads of people in the summer, I guess it was. But what's his deal? Is he, because he's a Jamaican international, right? Well, and he's 19.
Well, he's Jamaican, but he's a really interesting player. Not because of his sort of his quick rise in Europe, but yeah, he is Jamaican and Jamaican born. But again, it's all reports. It's hard to get a lot of information about Jamaican Federation football anyway. But there's reports at the moment that he's represented them once for the under 23s, but he's sort of unwilling to commit until they improve their sort of standard and of the actual national team.
So what's his other choice?
Because Belgium. Belgium. Yeah, he could represent Belgium, who obviously would be a very attractive prospect at the moment. But again, that's all reported. He doesn't have a Jamaican cap, and you think that a 20 million euro player playing in Europe would be a shoo-in to start for Jamaica, regardless of if he wanted to. So you think there's something going on behind the scenes there. But
I think that just sort of highlights how carefully this kid has been managed. If you look at his career so far, he started out with some Austrian team, FC Liefering, I think, who are linked to RB Salzburg. He went from there to AS Trenčín.
Yeah, conspiracy theories all over the place. Lizards underneath the ground.
So he went to this Slovakian side next, who are linked to Ajax. So each club he's been to, you know, he's sort of been connected to something bigger. He then went to Genk, who have developed Courtois and De Bruyne through their academy, and they've had Koulibaly and Milinkovic Savic and Didi
and Christian
past
Benteke.
Few years. Yeah, and Benteke. So he's gone to another club which has a track record for nurturing talent and developing talent, and he's gone to Leverkusen, which do the same. They're one of Germany's sort of best nurturers of youth talent as well. So it's every step on the ladder he's taking. And I think that, you know, this whole international sort of thing sort of brings it into focus as well, how carefully he's sort of being managed. It's quite interesting to sort of break up his career steps so far and see where it's going. Obviously, the end goal is to end up at a Chelsea or a United. Yeah. But
so I thought he was a winger, but I've got written here in front of me on a mysterious piece of paper that he's a left back or a left wing back.
So he is, he would tell you he's a winger, and I think that is where his best position is. He's lightning quick. His output for Genk was impressive. He won Belgian Young Player of the Year when he was playing for them. Was really good in the group stages of the Europa League last season, because he actually moved to Leverkusen in January.
That might have been where I saw him. That might be why I've heard of him.
So he was good in the Europa League, and then in January, from January to July, he didn't play for Leverkusen. I think he made one appearance, and it was so bizarre, because I'd been following him as well, and I thought, this guy looks too good. And then all of a sudden, he moves to Europe, as you'd expect, as always happens. But didn't play, so you thought, oh, maybe something's happened here. And then all of a sudden, this season, he's burst onto the scene, sort of, but in a delayed way. He's playing left wing back in a 3-4-3. But as Leverkusen have a really young sort of attacking trio anyway, they've got Julian Brandt, who is a winger, plays
he's
for Germany.
Yeah, the one with both feet, isn't he?
Yeah, he's very good.
Blonde-haired, like classic Germany player. He looks looks like the poster boy of their thing. And then they've actually got a younger player called Kai Havertz, who plays in the left.
He played against us last year.
Again, he's really good, but sort of he's been compared to Mesut Ozil, and because of his languid style and his creativeness. So that means that Leon Bailey can't play in that narrow two. So they've moved him to this wide position where he excels because of his pace and how direct he is.
He's rapid. He's absolutely rapid.
We were talking about Mbappe and Sane earlier. In terms of seeing a race between those three, that would be really interesting. They use Bailey as this wide outlet on the counter-attack, and he's got 6 goals and 4 assists. Across all competitions this season, he's directly involved in a goal every 92 minutes. And the fact he's now playing this left wing back role is why the likes of Chelsea are being linked to him again. Because beyond Marcus Alonso, who did Chelsea have playing left wing back? Conte puts Pedro there, but then that's a completely different dimension you're adding to your team.
Yeah.
Leon Bailey's this left footed, much quicker than Marcus Alonso, but a physical presence in the terms that he has speed. Marcus Alonso has height. And technical ability, he's playing left wing back, but he would see himself as a winger. And if he played in a 4-3-3, he would be a left or right winger rather than the left back in that. But this Bayer Leverkusen formation in this young team that he's playing in, he's, as I said, he's burst onto the scene in a delayed manner, but he's one of their best players this season, and 6 goals and 4 assists. He's in the top three of under 23 contributors in the Bundesliga and for both of those metrics.
So if he's playing in the Leverkusen team, do we reckon he gets his move to a sort of Man United or a Chelsea or a Real Madrid, or does he just look really good in the Bundesliga and end up at Bayern?
He probably, like, if you look at players that Leverkusen have had recently, and you know where they've gone, well, even the last 20 years with Ballack and Zay Roberto and Lucio, they've always gone on to the next club has been Bayern. A Bayern Munich, yeah, yeah. Or someone like that. So I think it is, but I mean, he's still 20. I think,
yeah.
I doubt he'd go this soon in January or in the summer. I think he'll still be at Leverkusen for maybe 18 months.
But if he's had about 9 moves already, he must have a bit of a yeah, sort of twitchy agent, isn't he?
Yeah, so is
that, yeah, but I mean, that's what I'm saying. I think they're trying to get him to become this global superstar, yeah, and they're sort of taking it very step by step.
Measured.
And
global superstar, just loads of people like me, but like, I think I've heard of
him. Yeah. Well, I think it's because, like, already, again, with the work permit situation becoming that will, with when Brexit gets fully done or whatever, when they decide when they decide what to do with it, work permits become harder to get or not to get at all. So by already moving to Leverkusen for €20 million, he would be able to move to England now, because you usually need to represent your national team, which where his
but he'll get spent special 5 years dispensation in Europe, or right?
But he spent 5 years in Europe, and because a fee has been paid for him, they don't need to look at his international caps. So not only does that find a loophole for him moving to England, it again finds a loophole of him not having to represent or commit to Jamaica, which again, it's purely from a footballing perspective. He's come out and said, like, I'm Jamaican, I love Jamaica, but in terms of in a football career, what can I achieve with them? Perhaps quite...
We'll, like, play with Wes Morgan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an achievement in itself.
It's honest, isn't
Bailey
it?
And Morgan, the reggae boys.
Yeah. In all honesty, Jamaica... No matter how good, if you put Messi in Jamaica's team, they're not really going to qualify for much anyway. So,
but I just think then international football is just becoming club football, then, isn't it? If suddenly players are like, you know what, my country is terrible at football, so I'm not going to bother. I'm just going to play for them instead. It's like suddenly then it's just a bit like, but everything's merging into one.
But he's doing a carrot and the stick. He's saying, well, if you want me to play for you, then make
get
sure
better.
That, yeah, yeah. And which Jamaica, the Federation, as I said, it's hard to even find stuff about them. So they're obviously not. It's not their main sport at all. But if he wants to play, be a footballer and be recognised, and he's got these sort of lofty ambitions on a personal level, he wants the platform internationally to do that. And if Jamaica are refusing to train coaches and implement more people abroad and help their players find that level to perform on, then again, I know, as you said, he's got a right to change, I think, and because of what we said, he left Jamaica when he was really young, when he was 15 years. That's why he had to go to so many different clubs, because he was a minor.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's just pick and choosing a nation. He's gone through it and he's found a home. He found a home in Genk and did well. So Belgium would be a good choice. And I don't think we should sort of really punish him for that, really.
Mm. He's going to get punished by Brexit, though. Leon Brexit.
No Chelsea.
All right, enough of Leon Brexit. Let's move on to the big one, the stats showdown. Stats showdown. All right. The tension is palpable. You could cut it with a knife. Young Ollie. This is the best 2 out of 3 competition in which ultimately you probably end up breaking Jake's heart. Impress me with some impress me stats.
It happens all too often.
Jake's already frustrated, angry. Hardly over talking about Kylian Mbappe, so I'm going to give him the first stat this week.
Okay, right, to take my mind off it, as it's the season of giving, I've gone for an assist one first.
Oh, it's like Mesut Ozil.
It's not all about Mesut Ozil. Kevin De Bruyne, Sané and David Silva all on 8 assists as of time of recording. They could easily add to that, and they could reach 10 plus basically over the season. They're all close to doing it.
In the Newcastle game.
Yeah, probably. And I just thought, 3 players, 10 plus assists for one team in a season. How often does that happen?
Tell me,
and
how often does it
is, happen? The answer is not very often. The last time it happened was 2004-05. and it was Arsenal with Thierry Henry, Dennis Bergkamp and Reyes.
Reyes?
With 10+. And then the only time before that was Liverpool in 1995-96 with McManaman, Collymore and Barnes.
Reyes is in there. I'm stunned by Reyes.
Right,
okay. Ollie, you have to compete with stunning Reyes.
Okay, I've got a Man United one. So Jesse Lingard's brace against Burnley meant that he became the first Man United substitute to score a Premier League double since Chris Smalling.
Oh.
Did so also against Burnley in 2015.
Oh, Ollie, that's a good one. Oh, Jake. Jake's gone out there and he's done the deep dive.
That took 4 hours to research that. Did.
He's gone for a deep dive. And
how many Smalling records are there? Goal scoring ones.
Oh, finally goes 1-0 up.
Reyes! Remember the jeans.
Ollie, double down on this situation. Double down on him.
Right, I'm going for a Harry Kane one. Mm. Another record I saw yesterday. So, since Shane Long scored his last goal, Harry Kane has scored 50.
I've seen that one.
Oh.
I've seen that one.
Should be getting
I have used
ones.
Twitter, mate. Go on, Jake.
All right.
I think there's a huge opening for you here.
I found this one.
It's a good one, but I've seen it, so I'm not impressed.
It's a bit harsh on Shane Long as well.
I found this one interesting. Only three teams in Europe's top five leagues this season have had more shots from inside the six-yard box than West Brom.
Okay.
They're getting in areas. The teams are Barcelona, Man United and Marseille. West Brom have had as many shots from inside the six-yard box as Liverpool and Man City this season. They're getting in the areas.
All right, yeah. I'm happy with that one. I think that's quite a good one because West Brom are rubbish.
Yeah. And they're,
actually,
they're level with Man City.
Yeah. All right. He's evened it up.
Right.
Jake, come on. I believe in you.
I'll go to Arsenal for this.
Oh, again?
Again?
Oh, on your head bit. Reyes 1 minute, right. Arsenal the next.
If Alexandre Lacazette only needs to score one more goal to equal Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's Premier League tally for the club, and he would have done so in 112 fewer appearances.
Okay. That's quite good. It explains why Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain keeps getting mugged off by the Liverpool media team. You've seen, they keep introducing him to kids who don't know who he is.
They don't know who he is because he scored, like, I actually quite like Oxlade-Chamberlain, but 9 goals is dreadful and Lacazette has almost got it, as I said, 112 fewer games.
Ugh. Go away, Oxlade-Chamberlain. Right.
Right. Mine is based on Spanish players.
Oh.
We all like Donde. Spanish players. So no team in Europe's Big Five divisions has seen more league goals scored via Spanish players this season than Chelsea, who have 20, which is level with Real Sociedad.
I've seen it already.
Oh. Ollie, are you too much.
You plagiarising coming into a stat showdown.
No.
Jake, you've won.
Yes.
You've won this easily, and it's a win for honesty. Plagiarism.
Yeah, well,
pathetic. Two excellent stats.
They are.
But if you take a stat that's had 40,000 retweets, there's a chance that it might come across me every now and again. Oh,
this is
I'm
what media is,
of you.
Rob. It's all plagiarism.
Oh,
someone's
no,
plagiarising no. us three right now, probably somewhere.
What? In a football podcast where three blokes talk about football
yeah,
for an
exactly.
hour?
Exactly. Goes on everywhere.
We invented it. Jake, if people want to find you and your original statistics, original statistics, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter, which is at Jake Entwistle. And as we all know, no H.
It's literally never had an H. Never, not even once. And Ollie,
I thought it did.
Where can people find you if they want to find plagiarism?
O Miles 90.
And if you want to find me, I am at Rob Armstrong_WH. And of course, you can find Defending in Numbers on Deezer, where you can also find all your podcasts, live Premier League commentary and football playlists. Download the app or go to Deezer.com. And we will see you next week when it will be 2018. Who knows what records Marko Arnautovic is going to set next year. We'll see you next week on Defending in Numbers.
Defending in Numbers is a Deezer Originals production. You can find and download more episodes on Deezer and all major podcast providers.